knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work. Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Fight Knowledge. I am Jordan.
I'm Dan.
This is the podcast where Celine worships at the altar of Dan Friesen, and we talk about anybody but Alex Jones.
Me and Celine have a collaborative worship relationship.
Yeah. It's a real mutual worship kind of thing. Yeah. Very symbiotic.
Sure.
If you will.
Jordan, I have a question for you.
What's that, Dan?
What is your bright spot? For today,
My bright spot for today is I'm not trying to plug. I have no interest in plugging.
Oh shit! This sounds like it's a lead into a plug.
We did an episode of the other show that we do, the D&D show,
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes,
God's damn wizard. You are the dungeon master.
Yeah, and last
slightly competent dungeon master.
Oh boy, flailing about dungeon master.
Yeah,
but last night we recorded and it had been a couple of weeks since we recorded, and it was so fucking great.
It was a lot of fun
to hang out with Marty and Liz and Sarah and you. It's just so much fun to hang out.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. It's a fun social thing that we don't get enough of these days.
And
We could have been doing stuff like it this whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Turns out it was always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I admire your effort that you've put into that. You know, like we shit on you a bit, but
no,
it wouldn't work if you didn't have a story.
No, that's true.
For it.
That is true. No, and it's just so much fun. If you like it, you like it. That's great. But I like it, so everybody else can go to hell.
Well,
that kind of thing.
your bright spot actually kind of weaves into mine.
Uh-huh.
A little bit.
Yes.
And that is that we did do that Dungeons and Dragons-ish role-playing thing.
Yeah.
And it got away from me a little bit. And I started, I had a few drinks, and
sure.
I watched the White Rapper show on VH1. for a long time, it was not available anywhere. I couldn't find the actual episodes. And I started watching some of it on YouTube. It's now available on YouTube.
Thank God for internet archivists who are just like, I guess it was a show in 2003. We're going to find it and we're going to put it up. It's going to be out there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Mm-hmm. I watched the finale and John Brown is great. That's my bright spot, John Brown.
John Brown.
King of the Burbs.
King of the Burbs and king of murdering slave owners.
Mm-hmm.
The two greats of John Browning.
You know what I say about murdering slave owners?
Hooray!
Hallelujah, holla back.
Yeah, there we go. well, Dan, for today's episode, episode number 6 of Jordan Takes Away, 5.1, since we lost 5.
Yeah, I think we have to call this 5.
We'll call this 5.
But I am engineering this to make sure that the audio doesn't disappear.
Yes, I did notice that.
Yeah.
Today we are going to be talking about... Nazis and aliens, Dan.
Oh, thank God.
That's what I'm all about.
Oh, my God.
I will say this.
You
I went
told
through...
Me, you told me that you had found something that was really exciting and really interesting. I didn't know what to expect, and you telling me that it's Nazis and aliens, like, that is... as good as it could have been as a reveal.
It's about as good as it can get there.
Thank you, Jordan.
So we will be talking about one, maybe or maybe not, Dr. Joseph Farrell. But I think before we do that, we're going to need to say thank you to some people.
Need to do that. So first, let's say what's up to Peaches Are Nasty, Plums Are Supreme. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
I totally agree with that, too. Plums are underrated.
Yeah, wrong.
Next, Sir McSwaggins III. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, sir McSwaggins.
Next, Zach from Texas. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Zach.
This one is a policy wonk and also an added shout out. Shout out to Basic. This is the name here. Fuck you, Miles. I rode that wave like a dick. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much to all of that.
Next, Sarah Cat. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Sarah Cat.
All one word here.
Uh-huh.
Tacos, burritos, and chimichangas. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much. Tacos, burritos, chimichangas.
And I got to say, we have a technocrat.
Ooh.
And this is actually a combo. Girl with a U.
Uh-huh.
Girl. And Edith Beauvoir Beale Napoleon Moyle. You're now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
We got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, girl. And yes. Edith Beauvoir Beale Napoleon Moyle.
Thank you very much to the both of you.
Jordan.
Yes, sir.
We are recording this in advance, but we're on vacation.
Indeed we are.
And I kind of lied to you a little bit.
Oh, no.
Bit. Yeah.
What happened?
Well, see, here's the thing.
Oh, my God. Have you been dead this whole time?
Yes.
Oh, shit. I knew it.
I'm trying to lure you to my ghost home back in Hawaii.
I knew it. I knew it was too good to be true. Dan Friesen has been dead for 17 years.
Twist. This is Shyamalan.
Damn it.
No, it seemed like just a random vacation. It's like, it's overdue. Let's take some time and have some fun.
Sure.
The reality is that I'm celebrating a couple of wonks' birthdays.
Okay.
So I'd like to wish a happy birthday to Just Another Dan.
Okay.
Great name.
Great name.
I feel like every Dan should not feel like they're just another Dan. But this is another Dan.
I think every Dan is special, except for Dan Hastert. No, Dennis Hastert.
How dare you?
I somehow mixed up Dan Snyder and Dennis Hastert in my head.
Okay.
And they're both monsters, so that's
sure, great. Sure. Yeah. And then also Newt. Got a fantastic, lovely email from Newt, and I'd like to wish Newt a happy birthday. Although you could go Gingrich on this one, but you shouldn't.
No, actually, that's my grandfather's name.
Is that right?
It is his name.
I didn't know that.
It's
a strange name.
It is. Well, his birth name, I believe, is... not I believe. His Newton? Birth name is Noble.
Oh, okay.
And somehow they just started calling him, I guess... At a certain point in time, Newt was short for Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how he goes.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. How about that?
I don't dislike it as a name. And also, while we're in Hawaii, I will be chasing down a ton of lizards and newts and
for
geckos.
Sure. Oh, you got it.
So iguana. I might come back with a bunch of iguanas.
Oh, we're going to get a new thing of luggage. We're going to poke some holes in it. And you're just going to have a bag of lizards that you're wandering around with.
I think that was one of the most important parts of my childhood. In Hawaii was
finding little
chasing lizards.
Yeah.
And so we will reclaim a little bit of that. Anyway,
islands
happy birthday,
are more
Newt.
Fun than the plains of central Midwest.
Certainly,
I will say that.
Yeah. So, Jordan, I hear that we have a conversation about Nazis and aliens.
Indeed we do. Today we will be talking about an interview that Joseph Farrell gave with Richard Surrett. Who does the conspiracy show with Richard Surrett. He is also a regular guest host on Coast to Coast.
Oh, okay.
So he's that kind
of... He's one of the junior varsity guys Coast to Coast. I don't keep track of those guys, unfortunately.
No, and we're... he's pretty... I don't know. We'll see how much you like him. But Joseph Farrell is called a doctor. He has, from what his... bio says, a doctorate of patristics from Oxford University.
Okay.
Which is basically a theology kind of thing. If you go by what many people who have interviewing have given him credits for, he has a doctorate of physics. If you go
it
by
rhymes.
Other people, he has a doctorate of, what was it? Not patristics either, philosophy. None of which I think he has.
Uh-huh.
I kind of don't think that he went to Oxford, mainly because he has one story about his time at Oxford, and I can find no evidence that this Joseph Farrell went to Oxford. However, there's another Joseph Farrell with a doctorate of economics from Oxford.
Okay.
So that's possible. And his story from Oxford, his years there, is he was at a debate at the Oxford Union Society that lasted for 8 days.
Oh, my God.
And it was sponsored by Heineken for the Ethiopia food relief, like right around Live Aid, all of that stuff. And
an endurance debate.
Yes. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. If this is true, then Boris fucking Johnson was there.
Whoa.
Because they were, Boris was running the Union Debate Society.
Uh-huh.
And so we should know about this.
Were they on opposite sides of the issue, or were they?
I don't know.
Allegedly.
No. What I'm saying is he doesn't mention Boris Johnson at all.
It seems like it would be a headline.
Seems like you would know if you were at a 8-day debate with the future fucking prime minister of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, you'd think. The debate went so long that I had to break pencils and make a little fire in order to keep warm.
Yeah.
Like Wade Boggs.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. He also, according to himself, grew up in South Dakota. And one fun story he tells is that when he was growing up, he was around 6 or 7 years old, and his best friends, there were more than one of them who had fathers who fought for the Germans in World War II.
It's a great brag.
Yeah. So he grew up around Nazis.
Yeah.
Now, here is the...
It's the kind of thing you generally want to keep... Keep close to the vest.
You would think I don't want to tell people, because he tosses it off like, hey, they fought for the Germans.
Yeah, it's weird enough that, like, you know, we do a show where Alex talks about, like, being Confederate royalty.
Yeah, exactly.
That's weird enough, but I would think that, like, I know people and I hung out who were Nazis.
Were Nazis, yeah. They were just Nazis. You know, no big deal. But he is, however, a scholar. I think the fact that he grew up around Nazis will explain a lot of his later life. However, he is definitely a scholar. He's got at least a master's degree that I can confirm, and he has written a total of maybe 40, 45 books.
That's too many books.
Way too many. Here's the strangest part, though, okay? His first books are all about religion. He translated the Mystagogy of the Holy Spirit by Patriarch Photios, from the Greek, and apparently it's a really good translation.
All right.
And he's cited writing the foreword in Christian circles of being holy cow.
This is foreign to our show.
Totally. He wrote Free Will and St. Maximus the Confessor, which is him trying to deal with Calvinism. Mm-hmm. He does not do well. And then The Disputation of Pyrrhus, as well as, what was the other one? God, History, and Dialectic, which is his final religious book. Now, that was published in 1997. In 2002, he published his next book, which would begin the future of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to guess what the title of that book might be?
Well, I mean, you've already sort of tilted some of these cards.
Indeed.
And I think there's aliens involved, probably. Mm-hmm. So I would I would say that likely it has something to do with space raptors being involved with the Holocaust.
Giza Death Star.
Okay.
That's right. If you thought that the pyramids were just tombs, you're an idiot.
Totally.
Because that pyramid is a Death Star exactly like the one from Star Wars.
I would like to bring up that they were for storing grain. A guy told me that.
There's that.
During the presidential debates.
From there, he went on an absolute tear that continues to this day. He keeps cranking out books, some of which the titles can be like this. Grid of the Gods, The Aftermath of the Cosmic War and the Physics of the Pyramid Peoples.
Ooh.
Not a bad title. Reich of the Black Sun, Nazi Secret Weapons and the Cold War Allied Legend.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Let's see. Financial Vipers in Venice, Alchemical Money, Magical Physics, and Banking in the Middle Ages and Renaissance. Of all of his titles, there's four of them in his early life that are like, I am a good Christian. I read theology. I'm focused on this. And he's a good historian.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happens and he's just off the map.
Yeah.
Like completely off the map. and winds up on the SPLC's hate watch list because he is...
Why?
Well, you know, that's something that I have been struggling with, because I think if you'll listen to him as we go along, he's not a Nazi. What I think he is a Nazi fanboy.
That can be as bad.
It is weird.
Yeah.
It is really weird.
Yeah.
It's a strange, and it's not a big distinction. It's
no.
a strange one in that I don't think he wants the Nazis to win,
mm-hmm.
but I do think he's amazed at how good the Nazis were at finding alien technology. Which is a very strange a subset of anti-Semitism.
Sure.
But it's there. It's definitely there.
I'm interested to see how you lay out this argument.
Well, I mean, so he's another of the... He talks about globalists, makes a bunch of puns about them. He fancies himself a bit of a Dennis Miller type.
Sure.
But I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Then... There are another few things that are incredibly annoying about him. For instance, he always wears a hat.
That's always gentlemanly.
It is either a Indiana Jones hat or
annoying.
A classic English bowler.
Ooh.
This guy's from South Dakota.
Yeah. But he went to Oxford.
Yeah, I think he might be playing that a little bit well.
I wore a bowler for a little while in high school.
Did you tell people you went to Oxford?
No, but it was a desperate affectation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
here's one that's even worse. He chain smokes with a Cruella de Vil cigarette holder.
Oh my God, I love this.
And he does not inhale.
He
chain smokes and he just puffs the smoke out the whole time. So it's so infuriating to watch this man. I'm just screaming at him like, I quit smoking! Stop doing this to me.
There's a part of me that kind of enjoys that because it's so intentional.
Yeah.
It's not an
so
addiction.
It's so obvious.
It's
yeah.
Like...
No, it couldn't be more pathetic.
Or his life is art, and this is a piece of the...
We'll see. If he was parodying the type of...
He was doing like a Kaufman thing.
So say that what happened after his religious books ended is he was like, oh shit, actually religion might be stupid. I'm going to create this character
mm-hmm.
and pull off a decades-long scam to show people just how easy and how similar religion and Giza Death Star really are.
What if he just saw Andy Kaufman do his wrestling sort of stretch and was like,
totally.
I could do this, but with religion.
And it's not hard.
he was on his translating game,
yeah.
And he came across a text. He didn't tell anybody about it.
Right.
He translated it up.
Right.
And he's like, oh, no. Oh, no. I must satirize.
I got it. Somebody's got to do it. And
yeah.
if nobody else is stepping up to the plate, it's got to be me.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real, like, professor type, but the kind who kind of creepily talks to his students.
And chain smokes with a Cruella
exactly.
de Vil thing, but doesn't
yep.
inhale.
He says so on and so forth. Almost at the end of everything he says.
Mm.
It is the most... He's just an annoying guy. He's just such an annoying guy.
You know what, though? I mean, I say be that as it may and
totally.
Interesting. Like, I you can't fault somebody necessarily for their...
Ticks, those that, you know, cliches, no problem. But after every sentence,
but
and
people people just have ways of speaking and so on and so forth.
That's fair. That's fair and so forth. So on. We go. What is going to happen? I've listened to probably like 15 hours of this guy talk, and none
yeah.
of it was at all remotely usable.
Yeah, to little behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Jordan, you were telling me how interesting this person is and how much you wanted to talk about him.
But he's so boring.
Yes.
Yes.
You'd watched hours and hours of stuff. It was like, there's nothing here. And then
last night, he goes on Richard Surrett's show. Surprisingly enough, and there is a lot of interesting stuff there. Also, in this particular interview, Joseph Farrell is looking into the webcam on his computer, and he is holding an old-time phone up to his ear, like a big old-timey phone, like the peach ones that you could really slam with the wire cord.
The ones that had, like, the you had to put your finger in and go around the rotary.
The whole thing, yeah. It is so ridiculous to watch a man in a webcam holding a phone up to his ear.
I like that.
I kind of do.
Yeah.
But old man house phone would have been like, that's tacky. You should have just done audio.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
old man house phone, by the way. I actually got some intel on this. He has a hamburger phone. It's a house phone. But it's a hamburger.
Oh, okay. So he threw away his old Bart Simpson phone?
Yes. Yeah. It upgrade.
Oh, yeah. So we are going to begin this interview, and you are going to hear Richard Surrett give you some whiplash.
If we get, they're going to open up, they say, in phases. So the first phase, if 60% of the population is vaccinated, will give you a little bit of your normal back. If then in phase two, if 70%, you'll get a little sliver of your normal life back. And then finally, phase three, we need 80% of you vaccinated. I mean, I don't want to argue the efficacy or the safety of vaccines, and people want to have the vaccine. That's certainly their business. And those that don't, that's their business. But this level of coercion, you know, have we forgotten about the Nuremberg Code? I mean, how can people have such short memories?
That's very in line with InfoWars.
Yeah. What's fun about that, I find it so interesting that he is reasonable all the way. Like, you know what? If you want to get the vaccine, I'm not going to be a huge anti. It's killing you. And if you don't want to get the vaccine, I'm not going to be like, I'll kill you if you don't.
Well, I think that.
But the Nuremberg Code, you know, like that kind
that
of.
I think that reasonableness is kind of a facade, though. Like, I don't want to argue the vaccines.
I don't have time for it right now. Yeah.
That's not somebody being like, I'm on board.
Yeah.
That's just like, I don't want to deal.
Yeah.
But like the Nuremberg code kind of argument is very present in InfoWars world.
Yeah.
Like Francis Boyle brings that up a lot.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
It is.
It's just them saying, hey, this is how science and math works. If we have this level of protection, then you can do this number of things.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
The argument that I would make back to this, I think, would be like, all right, let's imagine a scenario where this isn't all fake or mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is an actual pandemic. How does what's going on now look different than what would be the best thing to do? Like, what is the, like, do you accept that this vaccination quota or quotient
mm-hmm.
is appropriate in the case of a real outbreak?
Yeah.
If exactly. so,
then
yeah,
what does
that's what I would like to say. Could you plan a better way to do this?
Yeah. Right. So we open the interview, and of course we're going to talk about, you know, COVID denialism and the like.
Well, we brought up Nuremberg, and that exactly. has to do with Nazis, so I assume.
You got it.
Oh,
so
boy.
Joseph P. Farrell has some things he would like to say.
Is he happy? Sorry, Farrell joke.
If these vaccines were so safe, why are they resorting to such draconian measures to push people into receiving them?
They're not.
Exactly. And the answer to that, even if they were, is because of assholes like you who are telling everybody not to get them.
I feel like people are being pretty aware that, like, hey, it's important. But, like, you know, I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen anything that would indicate to me like coercion of vaccination. I think that most of the people who I am in social circles with have been chomping at the bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And have hunted down vaccines.
No, we almost drove 5 hours to get you a vaccine.
Yeah. And now, you know, the CDC had that that recommendation that mm-hmm. people can stop wearing masks in public that you know, if they've been vaccinated. And that is just a measure of trust.
Yeah.
You know, like if you, like, That's not like everyone must wear a special shirt that they only get from vaccination centers and then they cannot wear masks.
Right.
Or whatever. Like, there's no coercion.
No. What draconian policies are you talking about?
Recommendations?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah. But I honestly think that it could be more draconian.
I would almost, but yes, you're totally right. You're totally right. And it's just that it's always a trap. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, especially with this guy. Anything that you say confidently, you are either right about, but here's what you're missing, or you are completely wrong about, and I have a completely different idea. So let's go ahead and play this. This is a long clip because I want everybody to get an idea of what this dude talks like and how he talks. So just see if he answers this question. Richard is going to ask him how much of this is preparing us for a world without jobs. Here is how that goes.
Well, I think a lot of it is, at least in their thinking. But I'll tell you something, Richard, there's something very peculiar going on in railroads, and people that know me know where I'm going to go with this. Because my dad was a railroad engineer, not the locomotive kind, but the engineer that inspects the tracks and so on and so forth, when I was very, very young. And he got me fascinated with steam locomotives. And if you've been following what's been happening with railroads in this country, the Union Pacific Railroad has been restoring steam locomotives at a breathtaking rate. They just finished restoration of an articulated big boy steam locomotive, 4884, to, you know, haul freight and so on and so forth. Now, the interesting thing is Union Pacific isn't investing all this money to basically create a locomotive works in Cheyenne, Wyoming to enhance railroad heritage days. There's something else going on. And my suspicion is that with the increasing reliance of global technology on digital systems, they've suddenly realized that they've exposed themselves and their precious systems to a little thing called electromagnetic pulse, or for that matter, hacking, cyber hacking, and so on and so forth. We just saw the Colonial Pipeline takedown. So I think Mr. Globaloney is also kind of hoist by his own petard. They're trying to put in digital systems, and particularly digital currencies. So what you're seeing as pushback, at least here in the States, I can't speak for up there for the Canadian provinces, but in several states in this country, we've seen some pushback of a very unusual nature against this idea of digital currency. South Carolina passed a measure recently to acknowledge as legal tender for all transactions.
What is he talking about?
And interestingly enough, that legislation did not state that the coin had to be denominated in dollars. Texas opened its own state bullion depository, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
So you're seeing some very unusual pushback that tells me that somebody, at least in some of these states, knows what the game is, and they're acting accordingly to secure some sort of basis for a currency should they try to roll out a digital system with their helicopter money and the missing jobs and a universal basic income and so on and so forth.
Look.
Did he answer the question?
Yeah. No, I honestly forgot what the question was because I was going along with what he was saying about railroads. Railroads. I think he was speculating that steam engine locomotives could get hacked, and I don't know what was going on with that, and that was interesting. I was thrilled to find out about steam hacking, and then it pivoted to digital currency.
Yep.
And I don't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah. So the question was, how much of this whole lockdown is preparing us for a world without jobs? His answer was...
Well, the railroads.
Well, I think, yeah. A lot of it is, at least the way that they say it, And then he goes on for 2 full minutes about something completely unrelated. Multiple things that are completely unrelated.
I resent this because I'm not interested in the cryptocurrency nonsense, but I am interested in the locomotives.
Would you like to know about the locomotives?
Yes, I would.
All righty.
I definitely would like to hear him talk more about hacking trains.
His thoughts.
And he said that anybody who knows me knows this.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like maybe it's a big thing of
his. This is a big thing of his. Hacking. This is a huge thing of his.
You know what's very hackable? Coal.
You've got it backwards. Oh. He's saying that Union Pacific is restoring old steam engine trains because they know that eventually all the electromagnetic trains are going to be disabled by an EMP.
Oh.
Yeah.
That actually makes more sense, like, as a coherent thought than I thought it did.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, kind of.
Because I thought he was speculating that, like, steam would be hacked.
Right.
It makes sense that it's like all these trains are digital. Then we have to have these as a backup.
Right.
These steam.
Yeah.
He's steampunking.
Yeah. And then, of course.
Futuristic giant mechanical robot spiders.
If we could get some flying steam engines a la Back to the Future 3, I'm going to be stoked.
Yeah.
Would you like to know what's going on with Union Pacific rebuilding those trains? This is from Justin Franz of Atlas Obscura. I'll just go ahead and read you the headline real quick. One of the world's largest steam locomotives is about to make a triumphant return. Hold on to your engineer caps, railroad history lovers.
Choo-choo.
Does that sound like a nefarious... it's very, very simple. 6 decades after the last big boy was taken off the rails, the Union Pacific is rebuilding one of the famous locomotives in honor of the upcoming sesquicentennial celebration
First
transcontinental railroad.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tourist attraction or something.
Absolutely.
It's a celebration.
Then, as far as the digital currencies go, what he's talking about is states having repositories for gold bullion and, you know, like certain states saying you have to take gold if somebody gives it to you.
Right.
And I don't know why he's bothering about that, because you'll notice what states specifically he's referencing.
Hmm.
They are states that, one, are filled with people who say... would rather have the state have a gold bullion depository than sending a large amount of money to Ted Anderson.
Mm.
That would be smart.
Sure.
And then, of course, with South Carolina and the like, they're filled with people who are like, the dollar is going to explode. So they pass all these laws all the time. It's just random ass nonsense.
I would really love for you to sit me down
with
a map of the United States and tell me state by state what it's full of. What each state is full
of. It's full of people who are like, dollar's going to explode.
And then this one, I know. It's just potatoes.
Is that my version of the Animaniacs song?
Yeah.
Africa, Panama. That is kind of the way that he talks. So past that, I've tried to kind of edit it down for clarity.
Yeah,
as you will.
He seems like a guy who is boring as hell, but also is teasing like slightly interesting thoughts.
Yes.
In a way that's frustrating.
And now you realize why I was like, I gotta talk about this guy, but he's so goddamn boring.
Yeah, I can get it.
This next clip is basically another in a very similar stretch.
So you mentioned the Colonial Pipeline and the cyber criminals that effectively shut that down and caused long lineups at the gas stations and so forth, and really kind of a warning shot of things to come. And then Colonial admits that they ended up paying $5 million in ransom in cryptocurrency. I think we're probably not getting the full story here. What are you hearing about what really happened? I mean, was this really just an isolated, an incident of some gang of cyber criminals that decided, to roll the dice and see what would happen? And lo and behold, they paid up. I mean, what are you hearing about?
Okay, so... That is the question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Very simple.
Long-winded question.
It's a long-winded question. Everybody on these shows, also, every show that I think I've seen him do an interview on is at least 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
This one was, thankfully, only an hour and 51 minutes.
I'll say that, like, in terms of, like, a lot of the stuff that I listen to in conspiracy, that sort of sphere, at least this guy's being precise.
Yes.
And like, it's not good or all that, like, I don't know if we're going to get to any truth. But
sure,
at least
sure.
He's asking a specific question.
Right, right. No.
There's something to be said for that.
I like that Richard Surrett is doing a Casey Kasem impression.
Yes.
So much. I'm waiting for him to do top 40 hits.
We're going to talk about the...
hey, everybody, we're down south, going to the left and the right
today. I suspect they paid $7 million in ransom. What about you? And also, here is... 303.
So
why did I come up with 303?
Really don't know. Where'd that one come from?
I don't know, man.
Okay.
I was trying to think of bad music, and it was the first thing that came to my mind.
Well, you could have done worse.
Yeah.
So simple question. What do you think is, what are you hearing? What's going on?
Do you have feelers out?
Yeah.
Well, I've heard basically the same thing, but I'm like you. I don't think that we've heard all of the story. And one of the interesting things about the colonial thing that I don't know how it was reported up there, but if some of the media down here was citing government officials and so on, saying things to the effect that this is there will be more of this. So yeah.
So he's citing government officials saying that there will be more of this, and all he's really responding to him with is, "Yeah, I think you're about right there." And then he goes off on a different thing that you didn't know about. Like that kind of, mm-hmm. Every time you introduce something or ask a direct question, it is immediate, like, well, maybe, and then going off into whatever it is he really wants to talk about. And
right.
Everybody just listens to him like, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I have watched him talk for almost 10 minutes uninterrupted, and people are rapt by this, and it's blowing me away.
By people, you mean you.
No. I mean the interviewers.
Right, right.
They're
right.
All sitting there. There's YouTube. Like, this is not a small thing, neither.
Uh-huh.
There's plenty of people, like, constantly doing all those things.
The people aren't cutting him off.
No,
after,
no.
After, like, 3 minutes in your answer.
Totally. Yeah. You should absolutely be doing that. So, the answer is yes. It'll probably happen again. Obviously.
Well, what he's doing is playing that game of, like, the government is being like, hey, this is a new threat.
Yeah.
This is something that we can't expect might happen again, and we need to prepare strategies to deal with this.
Right.
If you are a business like the Colonial Pipeline that has, like, maybe infrastructure-related necessity,
yeah,
in your operations, be aware.
Yeah.
And instead he's presenting that as, like, the government being like, we're gonna do this a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, this is happening all the time now.
Again, I would ask if, like, this is real and there are these hackers doing this, how is that statement from the government any different than the best case scenario of a statement that they would make as a warning? What is the differentiation between it?
Well, they never do that.
Well, fine.
Yeah. Now, I assume you would think, hey, that answer is over. You've answered the question. Yes, probably, and it's probably a false flag. Mm-hmm. He is not done.
He's not?
Nope, he keeps going.
About a week after that story broke, there was a story about the interstate bridge on Interstate 40 from Arkansas to Memphis, Tennessee. The bridge was shut down because they had discovered a crack in one of the pylons on that bridge. And I've seen pictures of this crack. And the top of the crack is a perfect straight line. Now, the effect of that bridge shutdown was that barge traffic on the Mississippi River south and north of Memphis, Tennessee, came to an absolute standstill. So somebody appears to me to be working awfully hard to take down the infrastructure of the United States in these kinds of creative ways. So I think Colonial Pipeline is kind of the tip of an iceberg that that they're getting ready to do something major in order to push their agenda.
All right. Enough.
Yeah. Get it?
Yeah.
See, what happened was the Colonial Pipeline was hacked. Mm-hmm. Now, what also happened was, surprisingly enough, very near to where he lives, there was a crack in the bridge, right? But the reason that the government gave for repairing it was pesky barges need to get in and out because it's a massive
waterway. This is actually genius. This is genius.
Okay.
Do you realize
Sell me on this.
That for the last, like, 10 years... the globalists have been planting stories in the media about how bad our bridges are. They've been subtly warning that they're going to hack the bridges.
Right. You have to tell everyone.
Exactly.
You have to give them that cosmic choice.
There have been these op-eds about how more resources should be funneled towards bridge repair.
That's what they do.
So sneaky.
Now, the real story behind the hack is actually really, really fascinating. And if they had bothered to look into it
Not the bridge, right?
No, not the bridge.
Okay.
No, the bridge is not interesting
that's
at
just,
all.
That's
just a regular
that's
old...
That's a bridge.
That's just maintenance.
Yeah, yeah.
They were just maintaining the bridge.
I had a hunch.
Yeah, it was fine. But you can turn anything you want into a conspiracy theory if you just go, well, they hacked the pipeline and there's a crack in my bridge.
Right.
The government's working against
us. If you play the insinuation game, you can make a lot of mileage.
Yeah, exactly. But the real story is not, obviously they didn't mention any names of the people who were hacking. They were like, oh, is it a one-off event or anything like that? This is a hacking group called DarkSide who've done this. They are ransomware masters. Mm-hmm. They have been taking shit ton of money, and then they disbanded immediately following the Colonial Pipeline.
Smart.
Theoretically, from what people are saying, is after they got paid $6 million, the small collective of the hackers disbanded and then just took all the money.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they normally work is almost 70% of the money goes to all of these like subsidiary hackers who do all of the grunt work,
mm-hmm.
And then they take their cut at the end. Not so this time. So what happened?
So wait, they left the grunts out to
left them out to dry. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, brutal, right? No honor.
Not too surprising.
So this story actually begins before the Colonial Pipeline hack whatsoever. So from Technology Review by Renee Dudley and Daniel Golden, on January 11th, antivirus company Bitdefender said it was happy to announce a startling breakthrough. It had found a flaw in the ransomware that a gang known as DarkSide was using to freeze computer networks of dozens of businesses in the U.S. and Europe. Companies facing demands from DarkSide could download a free tool from Bitdefender and avoid paying millions of dollars in ransom to the hackers. That's a great thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea. Now, Dan, what should you do when you find a flaw in a hacker's programming?
Wait, who am I? Am I a hacker?
You're Bitdefender.
Oh.
Your job is to protect people from hackers.
Well, if you find a flaw, you should probably try and patch it, fix it up.
They did that. They mm-hmm. patched it and they fixed it up.
Okay.
Now, here's the problem. They released it as a public relations statement, and within 12 hours, DarkSide was like, oh, they found a hole in our software?
Let's find another hole.
Let's find it. They fixed it. It was over with.
Mm-hmm.
So Bitdefender has basically, and this is happening over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's constant back and forth.
Well, and here's the thing, though. People who are good at this stuff... don't tell anyone. And all of these antivirus scammers basically announce the moment publicly, like, hey, we fixed this. The hackers can no longer get to us. And then 5 hours later, it's all done.
Right, right.
So all of these antivirus companies are trying to get the positive, you know, like, look at how great we are.
The press of, like, we fixed this
totally.
Is actually antithetical to their goals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got it. They continue to go on. And there's a bunch of really kind of interesting little details here. Aaron Tantleff, a Chicago cybersecurity attorney, he consulted with 10 companies attacked by DarkSide. He said that DarkSide's representatives were shrewd bargainers. If a victim said they couldn't afford the ransom because of the pandemic, DarkSide was ready with data showing that the company's revenue was up. Like, they had all of this shit. They were ready. This was a Fortune 500
hacker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, I'd like to refer you to the accounting wing of our hacker collective.
Yeah. And not only that, but they have this, like, halfway, we're only attacking corporations that we know can...
Robin Hood kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They even came up with, like, actually, we do know how much COVID has impacted your bottom line, and we have adjusted our ransom accordingly. So even if you don't want to pay the ransom, it's like, God damn it, they make a lot of sense.
Listen, we're not heartless. We're hackers. We're not heartless.
Yeah. So what wound up happening is DarkSide just blew them away because Bitdefender is very, very stupid. And they're going to continue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it goes. And all of this, they're talking about, like, oh, it's a conspiracy. Are these rogue actors or anything? If you look into it, you'll see that this is a hugely sophisticated operation.
Right.
With people who are incredibly successful at all of this.
And it's kind of an inevitability of, like, digital progression.
Exactly.
You know, like, as there is more stuff that is online and digital, there will be the highwaymen of... The online space.
Of course.
You know, like, it's just, like, it's exactly what you would expect to grow and get more sophisticated as people who had robbed stagecoaches turned into...
People who robbed trains.
Yeah, and then it would turn into a mafia.
Exactly.
And things get more sophisticated and more organized. It makes sense that the inevitability would be something like this.
Totally.
Yeah.
And instead, they just... they're so boring. It's so much more boring, their bad conspiracy theories, than what is a real conspiracy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is the exact same thing that we talked about with, like, that guy in the IRA.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like the reality of it is fascinating, and it is a really interesting piece of how, like, history and, like, human interaction works.
Yeah. Totally.
And instead, you're turning this into a conspiracy that's actually more boring than the actual real world.
You're trying to fit it into your large conspiracy theory where it doesn't belong.
No.
Just be interested. Just be curious.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's just not hard.
You don't have to distrust everything.
Yeah, exactly. So real soon we're going to get into space, but this one, I just have to, this is just silly.
St. Michael asks, Joseph, what about the Apollo? Oh, he wants to go a secret space program, I guess, here, or something related to maybe the lunar landing hoax. Joseph, what about the Apollo 12 ascent stage experiment crashing into the lunar surface and it rang like a bell for a long period of time? Well, I don't know that it rang.
See, I accidentally cut it off just a little bit early, but he is saying... He got a question from the audience.
St. Michael.
Mm. He's asking Joseph, hey, how is this possible? And as Richard is asking the question, he's like, they say it rang like a bell. And he's like, huh, well, that sounds silly.
It didn't.
Yeah.
So would you like to answer the question that I have just negated?
Exactly. And here is the answer.
Dong.
Anyway, Joseph, any thoughts on the Apollo 12 ascent stage experiment crashing into the lunar surface?
That individual is actually citing the language of the scientists that reported on that experiment. That was their word.
Hello, I'm a scientist. It rang like a bell.
Excuse me, Mr. Surrett. It did ring like a goddamn bell, okay? Immediate response is just, no. It rang like a bell.
That's literal verbatim.
Yes.
From the scientific literature.
Despite being physically impossible in the world we inhabit.
Uh-huh.
It
You mean
happened.
You mean in space?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, in the universe we inhabit. Apologize. So then we have introduced space, and this
Wait.
Do what?
What is the conspiracy here? That the moon is hollow?
You're about to find out.
Is that the thrust of it ringing like a bell? Like, 'cause there would be sound vibrations if it was hollow. But then it would also have to have an opening.
Yes.
So it's sort of hollow Earth, but the moon.
Yep.
So the moon is a base. Okay, I'm putting the pieces together.
Okay.
Here, I'm going to spitball.
Okay.
The Nazis are inside the moon.
Okay. You're not far off. In fact, you're terrifyingly close.
This is basically the movie Iron Sky.
Whatever, he's almost all like a movie guy. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
I think in the early 70s, I don't remember exactly when it was, but Sputnik magazine, the old Soviet periodical, published a set of articles by some Soviet scientists that actually had the thesis that the moon was a big, huge artificial spaceship, because it was, you know, it was impossible to explain the physics of how it got there doing what it's doing on any of the natural models for its existence, you know, the capture model, the fission from Earth model, and so on and so forth. So I, you know, I give some credence to those stories and even to that theory, because, you know, it's like Isaac Newton said about the moon. The moon's the only thing that gives me a headache, because he didn't really have a good way of explaining how it got there doing what it's doing.
I mean, the guy quoted Sputnik.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Sputnik magazine from the 70s or 80s. Some Russian scientists speculated that maybe the moon is a spaceship. 50 years later, Joseph P. Farrell thinks that that's probably true.
My friend, have you considered that cheese?
Yeah, yeah. It is that that's the type of thing that we're dealing with. Right. And you are absolutely right. There are Nazis up there.
I mean, I feel like, you know, in the 70s, if it was the late 70s, this might have been after a particular Death Star showed up in movies. Looked sort of like the moon.
Oh, yeah? That's not a moon, Dan. It's a space station.
They're really biding their time with, like, doing anything with it.
Yeah. You know, yeah, like destroying 70s and 80s. You don't know what it's for just yet.
Uh-huh. At least, like, the second Death Star was, like, under construction. And that made made sense for, like, why it wasn't doing much.
Right.
You'd think if the moon was, like, a space, like, station, it would have blown up a planet by now or done something.
I do like the idea that instead of whenever in Star Wars they're like, it's fully operational, instead they're like, listen, we're going to have to hang out here for about 50, 60 years, and then we'll get to them. I swear to God, we'll right there.
Don't fucking move.
Don't move.
People will notice.
Otherwise, they'll think.
Yeah. Don't leave the moon.
Not just that, but
they would need to have, like, MREs, too. Like, they'd need to have so much food inside the moon.
Sure, but not just that. You have to then say that the moon has always been a space station.
Right.
So for
someone had to have created
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Someone had to have built it.
Pre-Earth, because everybody is,
definitely.
Yeah.
And there needs to be, like, some kind of, like, a biome inside that has, like,
something.
There's no light source, so you can't have, like, plants having photosynthesis.
No.
I don't know how you would keep animals alive. That seems like it would be prohibitive.
Yeah. On the moon? Or in the moon?
I guess you could have, like, an elaborate fungus kind of economy.
That's true. It could be like a Lost World scenario where you go in the moon and it turns out that there's actually brush and a beautiful verdant tropical island there.
I think you would still need something to give, like, energy to that flora and fauna.
Atlantis. And
fine.
And also Atlantis is always
also
in play.
Magic.
Atlantis is in play.
Thank God.
So we're at the midpoint. They just started talking about space, and now I love this clip. I just love this.
Hey, thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi. Your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Hello to everyone listening in our flagship station, AM 740, 96.7 FM, Zoomer Radio, here in Toronto. And hiya to those of you tuning in.
I just love it. It just reminds me so much of Casey Kasem.
Yes.
It's just so much Casey Kasem. I just love it.
Let me describe a Norman Rockwell painting and give a shout out to the only station I'm on.
I there's something about that that just reminds me of literally a long road trip in the middle of the night listening to some terrible radio station, and you hear that and you're like, ah, that's what radio's about.
Yeah, you were saying that this guy's one of the like junior varsity guys on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
And it
shows.
It smells like that.
Yeah, totally. So the reason that I wanted to do space is aliens are obviously in the news these days.
And we don't get enough of it these days on the podcast.
No, we just don't.
Yeah.
And then this guy's obsessed with Nazis, so why not put them both together?
Sure.
Now, how might you think that... Because this is one question that I was interested in, especially, is everybody normal now, everybody who is not a space weirdo before, is now like, holy shit, government's saying there's aliens or something going on here. How is the UFO community taking this?
False flag.
And the fact that the government stole UFO from them and changed it out of nowhere just because they didn't want them to look stupid.
It's fake.
Yeah.
Right?
So let's see.
Okay.
We have this technology now, and maybe, you know, that might explain the Tic Tac UFO videos, even though the Pentagon is saying they're not ours. They're not ours. Well, maybe that kind of blows that out of the water.
Well, the Tic Tac videos, you know, and all of this stuff, you can go look up patents online for triangular-shaped vehicles that use some form of field propulsion. What bothers me about all of this is not so much that the technology apparently does exist. What bothers me is the constant rush to attribute it to E.T. And
well, I mean, that's a thought.
Yeah. The guy who just told us that the moon was a fucking spaceship.
Well, it rang like a bell.
That the Pyramid of Giza is actually a Death Star.
Right.
That the Nazis are just fucking everywhere, cloning people and all this stuff.
Sure.
He's telling you people are rushing to judgment on this E.T. stuff.
Yeah.
You don't know. You can't tell that.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he's being real dismissive of this. And I will admit, if this is one of those situations, too, where I've looked into it, and these, the original UFO folks, are now debunking the government's videos.
Right, because it doesn't work for the stories that they...
Right.
The folklore of...
Exactly. Yeah. But in this situation, they're doing a good job. The government's videos can very easily be explained, and it's kind of disappointing whenever you look into the simplicity of their explanations and you're like, oh, shit, what a surprise. Human error and machine error. That's never happened in the military before.
Yeah. Like a lot of like headlines and like excitement can you can get ahead of yourself a little bit. And that's something that I actually think is really fascinating, is that like a lot of these communities are capable of decent critical thinking.
Totally.
It's just misdirected.
If you're attacking their bullshit, they will apply very rigorous and solid critical thinking skills to your bullshit.
They can.
Yeah.
It's just not usually done.
Exactly. Yes. It is very much never done. So
that's why when I hear that clip, it's like, okay, yeah, people are really eager to attribute this to aliens. It's like, yes, they are.
Yes. I agree with you.
I don't disagree with that statement.
But not coming from you.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And he's getting a little bit salty these days.
Oh, no.
About his UFO information.
The idea that this was a vehicle reconstructed on the basis of what they had recovered from crashed and recovered UFO vehicles, that to me could be a cover story for what they're really up to. In other words, that this might be wholly a human product. I don't know, but I'm increasingly skeptical, Richard, about the ET narrative, particularly from governments that have been willing to lie to our faces about, you know, masks and vaccines and so on and so forth. So,
he thinks everybody's stupid.
What if it's an actual Tic Tac? What if it's just
Buzz marketing?
Yeah,
do you think it's like that? That time Aqua Teen Hunger Force put pictures up places, yeah. and then they got bomb threats from yeah. it or whatever.
What the Tic Tac's been biding their time,
sure.
saving up
sure.
their ad revenue.
Sure, sure. There's a secret program
yeah.
to give Tic Tac the power to create extraterrestrial vehicles.
I believe it.
I don't think that's terribly wrong. But yeah, everything that you think is wrong. Mm. Everything that they think is wrong. And if you know something, you're wrong about it, and here's why.
Oh.
And now he's starting to get a little bit possessive as well.
Are you thinking that the technology exists and that these are made in the good old USA, or did this technology find its way into the hands of our adversaries, Russia, China?
Well, I think a lot of it, I go back to what I've been writing about in my Nazi series of books. I wrote a book a few years ago that ufology loves to ignore. It's called Roswell and the Reich, and it's about the Roswell incident.
I pray that I never do anything that the UFO community loves to ignore. I pray that is not a fate that I have of my career, where I'm pissed off that the UFO community ignores my book.
It's very strange that the UFO community is not also willing to toss the Nazis in with the Roswell circumstances.
Some of them do, though.
That's true.
I feel like this guy's being a little bit, I don't know, salty, like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that is a conspiracy that I've heard before.
Sure, sure.
It's not something that's like verboten in conspiracy and space communities.
I have read a little bit of his book, though, and
they made a movie called Iron Sky.
I've read a little bit of that book, and not Iron Sky, the novelization of the movie Iron Sky. No, it's just nobody reads my books. That's yeah. like that's kind of where it's.
I relate.
Yeah, no.
I have professional misgivings about more people could listen or
the ufology community as well.
No.
Oh, no?
No.
No. You would prefer
just generally, like, I think anybody who creates things, like, we could have a wider audience.
Sure.
I feel like that's what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's more saying they don't respect me.
So on and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. I just love it. This is kind of fun for me. Just because everything's obviously a false flag.
Right.
Nazis obviously had E.T. Giza Pyramid is a Death Star. All of this stuff is true simultaneously. But somehow, these guys don't take it to a mean place. Like, even for all their COVID denialism, which is inherently mean and cruel, it's not like they're not the type of person that I'm used to hearing talk about this, where they almost relish like the inflicting of cruelty or the expression of cruelty.
Right. Like, for someone like Alex, it's less about the point and it's more about getting to yell at somebody about how they're wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of a feature of a lot of the stuff that we see.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And for him, you don't think it's. That.
It's not malicious. He strikes me more as almost a hoarder of Nazi bullshit. Like, instead of somebody collecting Beanie Babies, he's collected lore and he's just hoarded it. And so I don't know how much of it is anything about how he feels or thinks or even has, like, prescriptions or what we should do. I don't think he takes any of his, like, here's what we should do, seriously.
Right.
All he's really interested in is hoarding all of this information.
Mm-hmm.
None of it is true, but he's so hoarded it over the, you know, it's just like he did with when he was a theologian. He hoarded all of this biblical knowledge, all of this history, and tightened it
down. He wants to be the dungeon master of Nazi space.
Exactly. He wants everybody to kiss the ring because he's hoarded the most knowledge.
Yeah.
That's the way that he operates. And so, yeah, in this situation, it's just ridiculous.
All right. Let's see. You betcha. You betcha asks, Joseph, how do you compare COVID vaccine passports compared to the longstanding requirement to have your kids get a vaccine to go to school or vaccines for yellow fever to travel? Which is an interesting point. So, you know, in other words, why are we getting all upset about and worked up about vaccine passports?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I got excited when I heard that question because that would be a moment if that shows up on InfoWars where Alex is like, I'm sorry, we got to let you go, and hangs up real quick, because it's a very solid question.
Yeah, I honestly was listening to it, and I got lost because it bored me.
Well, it's not great.
Yeah. No, it's just like, that's all right.
Yeah, so I was thinking, this is great, because it's a reasonable question, so the only way out of it is you got to take a big swing.
Yeah.
You know, I got really excited.
You got to hit hard.
I got hit hard.
I simply don't buy the universality of vaccines. I grew up, as many people in the United States did, in a state where this was not a requirement. In fact, the only vaccine I've ever had in my life is the polio vaccine, the Sabin vaccine when I was very young. I've not had any vaccine ever since that. So it's not an entirely universal experience.
Huh.
Nope, no big swing at all. He just says, I grew up and I didn't have to get vaccines.
Except for the polio one.
Except for the polio one. Now, why are we not talking about how the polio vaccine is also evil? Let's not worry about it. He's already had it. He was a kid. We're not going to deal with that. Sure, that does beg the question, are some vaccines good?
Right.
But we're not going to deal with that.
Sure.
Isn't that a real... I was so disappointed. I was so disappointed because his answer is just basically like, well, maybe if I had grown up in that culture, I would understand what you're saying. But since I didn't, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I wanted Nazis to be behind it.
Yeah. It is a little bit of a swing and a miss.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. It's a real bummer.
Yeah.
That
is the interview with the conspiracy theorist equivalent of stepping on a banana peel.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, somebody should have thrown a pie in his face immediately following that.
Yeah.
Put a little comedy in there. Come on, guys. So now we get to some of the things that Pharrell is writing. So he also has a blog, and he posts stuff all there.
Have you looked at his blog?
Oh, yeah. I've read a lot of it.
Does he have any posts about how no one ever really dies?
I don't think he has posts about how no one ever really dies. But it
you know,
is...
NERD, the group that Pharrell was in?
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
You're killing me. I'm trying to do this. I'm not great at running a show and dealing with references.
This is what I have to put up with from you
I recognize
quite regularly.
That. And you've done it several hundred times.
True.
They talk about one of the things that Joseph has written.
You posted a blog... I'm not sure how long ago, it wasn't too long ago, discussing some rather interesting formations that you've spotted on Mars. First, there was some discussion about some ice formations on the planet, and that led you to look a little further, and what did you spy?
Wait. You buried the lead. You didn't tell me this guy maybe has a telescope.
He does.
Because that's enough to get him on Project Camelot.
Unfortunately, he does not have a telescope.
Oh.
He is talking about pictures posted from 2001 by the Mars Odyssey spacecraft.
Sure.
And Richard sets this up as though this is a very important article. And Joseph's response, we're not going to listen to because it's 8 minutes long and all he's really saying is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying stuff like, hey, it looks like it could be. Let me read you the caption. So the pictures that Richard is talking about, saying this article is very good.
Uh-huh.
Let me read you the captions on these pictures. Quote, when I look at this with my layman's eyes, I'm not seeing much about Antarctic ice flows and a whole lot of weird stuff that borders on things that look like nearly perfect circular whatchamacallits.
Huh.
Good. You think that's good stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, look, the scientist said that the moon rang like a bell.
True.
And so this seems like scientific language to me.
Yeah, that's true.
The doodads and whatchamacallits.
Well, it goes on. Quote, and then there are lots of odd little bumpy things, often neatly arranged in rectangles, triangles, and so on. And then finally we have lots
and lots
of rectilinear and structural looking things.
As somebody who spends a fair amount of time reading things in journals, I'm used to things being described as bumpy little things.
Bumpy little things? Yeah. Whatchamacallits?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to have to cut your chest open, mm-hmm. and we're going to perform some surgery on your who's it, mm-hmm. and then we'll take the what's a mm-hmm. and put it in your hoorah, and then you'll be good.
Yeah, you fell off this high place, and the problem is that really hard thing inside your arm... It's got a crick in it.
It's got a crick. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You got a crick in your heart thing.
See, all I hear is an unfamiliarity with scholarly writing on your part. Unfamiliarity with research. Wow, yeah. I mean that doesn't sound very serious.
It doesn't sound like somebody should bring it up in an interview and be like, "Now you just wrote this interesting thing."
I mean, you have an uphill battle whenever you're starting an interview and being like, "You wrote a blog."
Yeah,
that alone is a tough sell.
Yeah.
And then when the blog is whatchamacallit, not great.
Now, I'm assuming you're asking, how is it that they can pay for these whatchamacallits, bumpy things, and structural-looking things? Mr. Global Annoyed, as I think he likes to, instead of saying globalist, he likes to Dennis Miller it up with Mr. Global Annoyed or whatever.
You got
to
avoid the Global Annoyed.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. That one I got. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to talk about how everybody pays for it.
We were talking about Mars and a little bit about the secret space program. You mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz earlier and the missing trillion, something like $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government. So is it your belief that much of this money is being funneled into the secret space program for what, the construction of deep space platforms and so forth?
I know Catherine Austin Fitz.
Oh, do you?
Well, not personally.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah, she comes up in various places.
Yeah. She's a former HUD official in the W administration. And then when she left, she created a brokerage firm. And she started doing business with, you guessed it, the HUD. Now, what was going on is while she was doing the accounting... for these contracts with the HUD and the Pentagon and that kind of stuff, stuff didn't look right.
Mm.
It didn't look right at all. Things are going wrong. And so Joseph is going to tell us what it is she found.
So if we go back to let's say, the bailouts in 2008, they pumped an enormous amount of money into the system, or did they?
Ooh.
Ah.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, they...
So the bailouts
were
for, like, upgrades to the moon.
Basically. Now, his theory, I guess, is that if the bailouts happened, then inflation should have skyrocketed, which, okay, that doesn't exactly work, but that's fine. What he is completely ignoring... is that the $21 trillion that we're talking about is not missing in the sense that it's like it was taken away and now it could be anywhere.
Right.
It's missing in the sense that the Pentagon, by design, does not keep track of where it spends money.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't keep track of it. You can't audit it. Nothing happens. They've tried to have so many accountants go in and just give it a shot.
Right.
And you can't do it by design, because if you know exactly how much money you're spending, you might get less.
Well, there's that. And then also, I would assume that there's probably some kind of like national security reasons why you wouldn't want that information being somewhere where people could possibly get a hold of it.
Sure, that kind of thing.
I would assume that maybe there's some of that.
Right, but even then, you would have a budget, and they do not.
Right.
They just have money, and then they spend it.
Mm-hmm.
So even whenever they're talking about passing a military budget, it's just there,
mm-hmm.
and they spend money, and if they spend more than that budget, the government's still going to pay for it. Nobody cares.
Right, yeah. Right. And that sort of like missing money is the same kind of thing that people talk about with, like, there's this unfunded Social Security and
totally,
stuff.
Totally.
It's the same misunderstanding of, like, it's not unfunded. It's just the money isn't there yet because it's future.
Exactly.
It's people paying into it will pay for it in the future. You know, like, it's the same sort of semantical trick that people use to try and argue against any kind of government spending.
Exactly. Now,
although in this case, maybe there's more to it than...
Oh, no. Everybody who has looked into it, everybody who has looked into the Pentagon budget has, like, immediately... Like, they open their computer, they look at one line, and they raise a red flag up into the fucking sky and shoot flares, and they're like, this is not good!
Yeah, yeah.
This is a problem!
It's a misunderstanding based on, like, the way it's being described.
Yes.
But it's an actual... This is a problem for a different reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got it. Now, Joseph has a different theory than that.
So I've actually speculated... that somehow this money may actually be going off world.
Yeah.
How? I don't know.
Sure. Sure. I'm in.
I just love that.
Yeah.
I just love that he does not go on. This is the one time that he really doesn't go on further.
Cool.
Here's his response. Well, I think it's probably off world, and I don't know how it got there.
Now, I should say I don't know the mechanics of this. I got no idea.
Right?
I'm not even going to give you a guess.
No.
But I will say that I'm just speculating.
Exactly. Yeah. He's literally just saying, yeah, I don't know. It's probably off world. Might be in that empty moon up there.
I would love to be the guy doing this interview because my response would be like, oh, you're speculating. Cool.
Oh, are you?
Oh.
Interesting.
I'm speculating that money stayed on world. Now what? We have reached an impasse.
We must agree to disagree. Yeah, I mean, it's just that so often. So what he always
what
does...
What is money in space?
Moon rocks.
No. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, yeah. No. Intergalactic treaties recognize money.
All right.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. Otherwise, how could we do business with the ET if they don't recognize our currency?
I would suggest we don't, but... Please go on.
And so that's exactly what Joseph does with everything.
Speculate?
Yes. The only difference between that clip and what he normally does is the tricks he uses of being like, I'm going to flood you with names. I'm going to flood you with information. Because he's an incredibly knowledgeable guy. He's hoarded all of this information.
Right.
So he hits you with so much references all the time that people skip over the fact that most of his responses to questions are essentially, I'm speculating here.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
I might be making this up.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's just mind-boggling how popular this guy really is. It's nuts. Because he's boring and he doesn't have anything to say.
It doesn't seem like it.
And then this is the, I believe this is the last clip because I just couldn't do this after this.
One of your blogs, recent blogs on GizaDeathStar.com, and it's entitled Physiology of Precognition. And as you point out, it's a wild article that I guess someone shared with you, and it has to do with these scientists who have discovered that the heart and brain can respond to future events, obviously, before they happen. Tell me more.
Well, I find that very interesting because it seems to present a physiological case that the structure of the brain and the heart, and they're very, very similar, somehow represent or mirror the fabric of the universe. And the reason I find that very interesting is you can go online and look at pictures of galactic clusters and what they think are the plasma strands that connect them, and then compare those pictures to actual neural mapping of neurons in the brain, and they're remarkably similar.
Yes.
You ever see a fractal man?
Yeah, that's what I was listening to that, just going, supposedly I'm supposed to take you as an authority on this, and you're telling me your response to precognition possibility is to say, look at the pictures of the stars and people.
Uh-huh.
Very similar.
Yeah, maybe we're little bugs inside a brain.
Yeah.
Of, like, the universe.
The
brain.
Universe is a big brain.
Yeah, and that's just another person or something.
Fine, man, but come on. Come on, you're supposed to be the expert in this shit, and you cannot come at me with, you know, they look alike.
Sure.
It's so disappointing to me, and I just can't handle it. I couldn't handle it past that point. I was like, I've heard too many times you just go, oh, it looks like a whatchamacallit, and then be done with your evidence.
When I tilt my head up, I see the whatchamacallit, and it looks like the doodad, and
Yeah, so precognition is probably true or not or whatever.
Yep.
It doesn't mean anything.
No.
And he just keeps getting listened to as though he's an authority, wearing his dumb Indiana Jones hat, smoking his Cruella de Vil cigarette, and he's not even smoking.
And
so on and so forth.
I feel like you shouldn't be mad at the hat and the affectations. Those are kind of charming. Like,
do you think that's why he keeps getting invited?
Probably.
Yeah, I would say so.
I might talk to him if I might be tricked.
Yeah. No, he's not interesting enough to trick you. I don't think you'll need to worry too much about that.
Oh, so yes. Shocking that he has not been on Project Camelot.
I don't think he has. Well, he was interviewed by not Carrie.
Oh, by Bill Ryan?
Yes.
Okay.
I remember seeing that.
Okay.
And so I was going to talk about that.
Bill is less fun.
He's much less fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was not good. It was done in a weird hotel room that looked like a Motel 6.
Yeah, that was their early aesthetic.
Yeah. So that is Joseph P. Farrell, the possible doctor, definite shitbag, and mediocre writer.
Nazis did not factor into this as much as I expected.
No, the problem with the Nazis is that is his, like, I guess, mid-period work.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, now he's more into banks are killing everybody.
Okay.
It was about 10, 15 years ago that he was all into Nazis, all talking Nazis all the time.
Before the era of podcasts.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
A lot of available audio.
Sorry there wasn't more Nazi talk, but
it was teased, but you know what? We never need more Nazis.
I mean, he grew up next to Nazis, so we could probably ask them.
Sure.
Yeah. I bet they've got a lot of Nazi content.
Yeah. Well, this was interesting, Jordan.
Yeah. I thought it was fairly interesting. I thought he was an interesting guy, and I thought we should talk about him.
Thanks for bringing this to my attention.
I will.
You will? So we'll be back, I guess.
I think we will. Until then, I'm pretty sure we have a website.
Yes, it's knowledgefight.com.
I thought we might have been on Twitter at one point.
Maybe at boo 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 boo.
Yeah, and I think if you wanted to Facebook, you got it. As always, I am neither Neo, Leo, DZX Clark, or Dan Friesen at all.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.